You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Americans were shocked by reports of inadequate care of soldiers returning from Iraq at Walter Reed and other veterans' hospitals, and we're the world's richest nation. So imagine how much worse it is in Iraq's hospitals, where there are not enough medicines to go around, and some patients have even been murdered in their beds. With me now for today's Underreported is science writer Michael Mason. He's witnessed firsthand what's happening in Baghdad's hospitals, and he's called his article in the August issue of Discover Magazine, Iraq's Medical Meltdown. Welcome to our show.
Hi, thank you.
Does Iraq have a unified healthcare system?
Nothing close to that. It's whatever they do have is it's ad hoc and just kind of pieced together.
What was the condition of its healthcare system before the U.S. invasion in 2003?
Well, right before the invasion, it had suffered under Saddam's regime for, you know, maybe close to 10 years. Saddam was spending about 50 cents per head per Iraqi on healthcare a year. And you can imagine the kind of toll that this took on a once pristine healthcare system. You know, prior to the Gulf War, Iraq was renowned for its medical care in the Middle East, and people from other countries in the area would, you know, go there for their medical care. That's obviously not the case now.
Who's currently overseeing the healthcare system?
Well, right now it's under the auspices of the current Iraqi government and under the Department of the Iraqi Ministry of Health.
Well, you report some pretty awful conditions in Baghdad. Do you know what the healthcare situation is like outside of Baghdad?
Well, it's supposed to be pretty bad all over. The best portions or the most intact healthcare areas of Iraq are up in the north, but you know, that's increasingly becoming affected by the disorganization and the security problems that they're facing.
How many hospitals are there in Baghdad, and how many of them are U.S. military hospitals?
Well, there are several large general hospitals in Baghdad, and there are a few trauma care centers that are operated by the military, but there are no American-run hospitals for civilians in Baghdad or anywhere else in Iraq.
Should I assume that the quality of care at the U.S. military facilities are significantly better than at the Iraqi hospitals?
That would be an understatement. The care that we are giving to Iraqis in military hospitals is world class. I doubt they could find that level of care in any of the finest facilities anywhere in the world. I mean, we're really, you know, sparing no expense to make sure that we take care of them when they're under our watch.
Well, what determines whether an Iraqi will be treated in an American hospital?
It's kind of arbitrary. Basically, if a service member reports an incident in which there, you know, is an accident or an attack, and that report makes its way to the military, you know, trauma team, then they'll, you know, intervene at that point. But if there's, you know, not an American around to report it, then that Iraqi won't find their way into the military healthcare system.
So if an Iraqi happens to be wounded just as a bystander of some military action and goes to a hospital, he's likely to go to an Iraqi hospital and get some pretty awful treatment.
That's correct.
Now, you went to some of these Iraqi hospitals?
No, I was at the Air Force Theater Hospital in Balad Air Base, which is about 30 miles north of Baghdad. And so I saw the Iraqis being cared for by the military, and got to speak with many of their caretakers there. And one of them had expressed to me that, you know, the biggest fear that the Iraqi patients had were basically involved leaving that hospital, because for them they viewed it as a death sentence.
So you didn't see the Iraqi hospitals. How did you learn about the conditions there?
Well, I began researching it because I was very curious as to what was happening, you know, why they feared leaving that hospital in Balad, you know, to the point that they thought that they would die. And, you know, the more I investigated it, the more, you know, the more shocked I became by what little there actually is there.
What are the most pressing problems?
Well, probably the number one issue is security. You know, the security is not being conducted by any American arm at all. You know, it's all being handled by the Iraqis. And this is particularly troublesome because the Iraqi Minister of Health is still largely loyal to Muqtada al-Sadr. And so Sadr, in many respects, runs the security for many of these hospitals, and it's causing, as you can imagine, huge problems. There's actually reportedly some, I want to say, security officers from the Saddam regime now in charge of security at many of these hospitals.
Well, what does lack of security mean? You talk about, you talked to our neurosurgeon who said that thousands of doctors had been killed and assassinated in the hospitals, or is this happening all over? And why would doctors be targeted by insurgents?
Well, for one thing, doctors, you know, fetch a pretty penny in terms of ransom. And so they're getting kidnapped at every opportunity, basically. And, you know, prior to the invasion, there were something like 30,000 doctors, 18,000 of whom have since fled the country. So, you know, there aren't very many doctors left, but the ones that are there are being targeted mainly because of their worth.
And then you say that some patients have been murdered in their beds. Why?
Well, that's correct. That's a sticky situation. Basically, because of the division along religious lines that are happening with the Sunni and Shias, it's very likely that a Sunni could wind up in a Shia hospital or a Shia could wind up in a Sunni hospital. And depending on the situation, you know, that patient could be ill-received and consequently murdered.
Although the Iraqi people, you really can't tell who's Sunni, who's Shia, except
that
they identify themselves.
You know, there are reports that the doctors are being bribed to disclose which patients are Sunni and which are Shia.
And since these people are vulnerable, they're a lot easier to target.
Oh, yeah. They're sitting ducks.
What about medications? Is the U.S. supplying these hospitals with enough medication?
No. There are, you know, horrible medication shortages. Now, there are some, I believe there are contractors who act as liaisons between the military hospitals and the Iraqi hospitals. And I've met one of them who would take expiring medications and donate it to hospitals. But many times these shipments that would be sent would be looted along the way, and very few medications in turn would make it to the hospitals. So, you know, to be able to get an aspirin there is a big deal.
My guess is Michael Mason, who has written an article in the August issue of Discover magazine called Iraq's Medical Meltdown. And you said that doctors are being targeted. I'm assuming that some of the better ones have left the country. So is there a shortage of doctors and nurses as well?
Yeah, there's a tremendous shortage of clinical staff. One of the physicians that I met with told me that some of the doctors who are in charge of care, he wouldn't give the same credentials to a nurse in the U.S., and these are people that are, you know, conducting serious medical procedures.
Well, ironically, one of the doctors who left has just been arrested as a bombing suspect in England.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yeah, I saw that.
What about equipment? If medicines are being looted, I imagine so is equipment.
Well, yeah, equipment was pretty much gone from the first moment. One of the people that I mentioned in my Discover Magazine article is Dr. Skip Burkle, who was the first interim health minister. And he had predicted that there was going to be looting, but he was surprised that it was so strategically focused on healthcare and hospitals. When he got to a hospital following the invasion, this was, you know, within a week of our invading in Iraq, he was appalled at just how ransacked the place had been. They took everything. They took the beds out from under the patients and literally put them on the floor. They took cardiac monitors. They took the motherboard out of CAT scanners. I mean, they went so far as to even raid the homes of doctors for supplies.
And the U.S. military is doing nothing about this?
No, not really, because, traditionally it's fallen under the auspices of the of USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development.
But I'm a bit confused about that. Dr. Skip Burkle, you write, was the first non-military American sent by the Department of Defense into Baghdad after the March 2003 invasion. And I wonder why the Department of Defense was in charge of rebuilding Iraq's Ministry of Health when I thought that was the realm of groups like USAID.
That's the way it's always been, but supposedly some very bad decision-making occurred at the top that placed much of the power, or took much of the power away from the Secretary of State at the time, Colin Powell, and put it under the responsibilities of Donald Rumsfeld.
Who obviously made better decisions than Colin Powell.
Well, that's
another show, right?
Yeah, well, you wonder what kind of problems occur when you have the Department of Defense making humanitarian decisions.
Although, as we said, Dr. Burkle was not a military man, and I'm sure that he really had high hopes of rebuilding Iraq's healthcare system. What were some of the things he said he wanted to do?
Well, he went in there with a very clear strategy. I mean, he has done crisis recovery many times before in different countries, Kosovo, Somalia. He knows exactly what to do, and he was the right man for that job. His strategy was to go in there to collect a bunch of data and basically respond to it in the right ways. He knew that there would be looting, so he wanted a response to that. He knew that there would be division among sectarian lines. He had a plan for that. And he knew that there would be medication shortages, and he even had a large medication order ready to go. And all of his plans were basically thwarted, and he was dismissed shortly after the invasion.
Who thwarted them?
It wasn't quite clear, but he did have an encounter with with Louis Luck, who was the administrator of USAID at that time. And I think they had exchanged some heated words because Luck did not approve the medications to be sent following the invasion. I think that began souring people at the top towards Burkle's Burkle's plan for the country.
So he was fired.
Yeah.
What's he doing now?
Burkle's a professor out in Hawaii. I believe that he has been invited to consult once more over the humanitarian situation, but he's shying away from it just because it seems like such an exercise in futility.
Well, he'd had success in the past, and here he wasn't, it sounds to me, wasn't really given much opportunity to succeed.
Nobody really listened to him at all. He was replaced by Jim Haviman, who was the Director of Community Health of the state of Michigan, who had not had any crisis experience.
How does Iraq's current healthcare situation compare to what happened in Vietnam during and after the war?
Well, we had a mission in Vietnam, which was, to win the hearts and minds of the people, and obviously that didn't work. Despite our bungling of the situation over there, we did have a very strong social response. So that means we built hospitals, 1,100 civilian beds, for example, and we treated some 40 million Vietnamese civilians. So in Vietnam, what we did is we basically took a non-existent healthcare system, and they only had maybe 1,000 doctors when the conflict started, and we laid the groundwork for a new healthcare infrastructure. In my Discover Magazine article, Burkle says that the world respected the U.S. for that kind of commitment, and we've done the exact opposite with regard to Iraq.
We had a respectable healthcare system that we've allowed to melt down into total inability.
Yeah, we took a system that was once quite strong, and through some terrible high-level decision-making, we destroyed it.
How much of this is due to the privatization of this war?
That's a good question. I think a very difficult one to untangle. There are a lot of contractors, but basically, we're not really touching the healthcare system. We're making attempts to contract out building of hospitals, but even those have failed miserably.
How are the healthcare systems of Iraq's neighbors, Jordan, Syria, and Iran, bucking up under this? Because they must be overloaded by Iraqi refugees.
That's the only option the sickened or ill Iraqis have, is to hightail it out of Iraq and try to find healthcare in the neighboring countries. And as you can imagine, they're very hard pressed to take care of all of them.
Now, you've described a rather bleak situation. Do you see any hope for restoring the Iraqi healthcare system, or is that going to have to be somewhere far down the line?
What we've done to the Iraqi people is beyond humane. We don't even treat our enemies this badly. Sure, we torture them, but at least our alleged enemies get medication and access to doctors. We're to blame for this problem, and we need to admit this so that we can begin fixing it. Maybe we'll have to ask for help, because it's my sense that we've forgotten how to do the job that we were once respected for.
Michael Mason's article, Iraq's Medical Meltdown, is in the current issue of Discover Magazine, the August issue. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.